April, Year of God, 894. 1. Royal Palace, City of Talkeira, Kingdom of Dalfarach.
Is it as bad as the reports all say it is, Philip?
Iris Dakin asked somberly. She and Earl Corus stood in one of her favorite spots, looking out across Lake Erden from the window of a small hanging turret. One reason it was one of her favorite spots was the view of the enormous lake, especially at this time of day, with the sun setting in red and gold splendor beyond its farther shore. Another reason was its convenience, since it gave directly onto the sitting room of the small suite she'd been assigned in the central keep of King James's castle. But the most important reason was that this particular spot was immune to eavesdropping. She only wished there were another spot somewhere in the entire castle where that was equally true. At the moment, a bald-headed man in his 40s, with a thick version of what had once been called a walrus mustache on a planet called Old Earth, and a nose which had obviously been broken more than once, stood outside her suite to ensure she and her guardian were not disturbed. His name was Tobias Raymer, Sergeant Tobias Raymer, recently retired, in a manner of speaking, from the Royal Coruscantian Army. Raymer hadn't been part of her original entourage, but Captain Joel Harris, who'd managed to get her and her brother out of Coruscant in one piece, had recommended Raymer to Corus. He was, the captain had said, not only loyal and stubborn, but also good with his hands, so perhaps he might be of service to His Highness during his visit to Dalfarach. In the months since, both Corus and Iris had concluded that Captain Harris had known what he was talking about, and Raymer had quietly assembled a small, competent, and completely unofficial royal guard for their 9-year-old prince. Only one of them was a Dalfarachan, and all of them were paid directly by Iris, using discretionary funds Corus had hidden away in various mainland accounts for the use of her father's spy networks. As a result, their primary loyalty was to her, and Divan, and not to King James. James had put up with it so far, undoubtedly because, assuming he was even aware Divan's guard existed in the first place, it was so small. There were only 12 men in it, after all. At the moment, Corus wished there were 1,200. He gazed at the princess, considering her question. She would be 18 in another 2 months, yet she looked 10 years older, and her hazel eyes were intent, dark with a worry she was careful to let very few see. Those were not the eyes of a young woman, a girl her age, Corus thought sadly. But they were the eyes of someone to whom he owed the truth.
"Actually, I'm afraid it's probably worse than the reports say," he said quietly.
He looked away for a moment, gazing out across the crimson sheet of lake water.
"What we've seen so far are the official reports," he continued, "the preliminary reports. They're still setting the stage, I'm afraid." His lips tightened. "When Clinton's ready, the reports are going to get a lot worse."
"May God and Langhorne have mercy on their souls," Iris murmured.
It was her turn to stare unseeingly at the lake for several seconds.
"How much truth do you think there is to the charges?" she asked even more quietly then, and Corus inhaled deeply.
That was a dangerous question, not just for her to be asking even here, where he was virtually certain there were no unfriendly ears to hear, but for her even to be thinking.
"And do you think she's not already thinking them, Philip?" he asked himself sarcastically. "Do you really want my honest answer, Iris?" he asked softly.
She met his eyes levelly and nodded.
"Very well," he sighed. "Obviously, we can't really know from this far away, but in my opinion, there's no truth to at least 90% of Clinton's accusations. In fact, there may well not be any truth to them."
"Then why?" Her tone was almost pleading. "If it isn't true, then why arrest them? Why accuse them of something that carries such a horrible penalty?
Because, Corus began, then paused. Iris Dakin was a highly intelligent young woman, and one who understood political maneuvers. If she truly couldn't answer those questions for herself, he would have preferred more than almost anything else in the world, to leave her in that state of ignorance. But the truth is, she already knows, he told himself sadly. She just hasn't wanted to believe it. In fact, she's probably wanted so badly not to believe that she's half convinced herself her suspicions are wrong, but only half. Your Highness, Iris, he said. I don't doubt Vicar Samuel and Vicar Howard were doing something Clinton considered treasonous. The truth, unfortunately, he met her eyes unflinchingly, is that Clinton's definition of treason has very little to do these days with treachery against Mother Church or God, and a great deal to do with opposition to him. My own reports and analyses of the vicarate's internal politics make it clear Samuel Wilson was Clinton's only real rival for the post of Grand Inquisitor, and he was a very different man from Clinton. I have no doubt he was horrified by many of the Group of Four's actions over the last couple of years. Given what's been reported to me about his personality, I'd be very surprised if he hadn't been trying to do something to at least moderate Clinton's excesses. And that, I'm afraid, would have been more than enough justification, in Clinton's mind, for having him and any of his associates arrested. Iris's eyes had flinched very slightly at the word excesses. It was the first time he'd used that particular word, his most open statement of disagreement with the official keeper of Mother Church's soul. Yet her only surprise was that he'd finally used it, not that he felt that way.